hoy. Welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I'm Tyson Ferris.
I'm Jeremy Sternhagen.
And today we got Jaws 3.
Yep. Jaws 3.
That's the one I watched.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Me too.
Not the other one.
Did you watch Jaws 3 or Jaws 3 or Jaws 3D? Because there's Roman numeral 3, numeric 3, and 3D for screen titles.
According to the screen title that I watched, it was Roman numeral 3.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I do...
And it chomped at me.
Yes.
Which I did not care for.
I think they all did that. So right out of the gate, I'll just throw down that... Well, I'm getting ahead of myself because I have notes on the Universal logo.
So I do.
So I do too.
What a weird way to say that. But off to a good start.
Even before we get to the Universal logo.
I will say this podcast has started better than this movie starts.
Oh, okay. I'm glad you think so. I think I'm doing okay.
You know why? Because it's genuine, mm-hmm. Not some awful cash grab.
Okay, so you're already playing your hand on how you feel about this movie. I get it. I see what you're doing here. So do we want to...
Speaking of cash grab, visit us at our PayPal account. Anyway.
PayPal, Real Jaws Minute.
Yep.
So, Tyson, as most of our listeners know, you hadn't seen this movie before.
I had not.
And I have.
Yeah. This is the first time I wish I had not.
You're regretting your decision to watch the sequels?
A little bit after this one.
Okay. I have thoughts on that. So, what did you know about this movie before you went into it?
I knew it took place in a sea park.
Okay. What else?
That was basically it.
Anybody who's in it? Any of the name actors?
I think I knew that Dennis Quaid was in it. I knew Louis Gossett Jr. was in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Yeah.
I was delighted to see Leah Thompson.
I would assume so.
Because, well.
She's Leah Thompson. She's an 80s icon.
She is. This is her first movie, apparently.
This was probably right around the same time as the Right Moves.
Apparently her role was almost Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh. Well, I'm not sure who benefited the most out of that because I'd say both of them had.
I would think it would be Jennifer Jason Leigh. She probably went on and did Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Well,
or was that the year previous to this?
That was way before this.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that Leah Thompson went on to be in Howard the Duck. She survived that, kind of.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
She had a sitcom.
She did.
Jennifer Jason Leigh didn't. So.
Yeah, well.
I guess our listeners can decide whose career is the better for being in or not being in Jaws 3. So... My history.
Well, JJL still kicking around, and I don't think Leah is so much anymore.
Yeah, might not be because her career dried up. Maybe she just doesn't want to do anything anymore.
Well, Hollywood also doesn't like older actresses.
Yeah,
so.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer. Reworked Universal logo is weird and kind of cheesy.
So I think I had notes on
it's
that.
The first red flag of this entire film.
Well, my notes on it are because they had to redo it for 3D.
They didn't have to.
Well, they wanted the logo to be in 3D.
Sure.
And
it looks slapdash.
It does. It doesn't work that well
in
2D. Everything about this movie.
But you can, the weirdest thing about this movie is you can see the 3D parts in 2D.
Well, you can tell when there's a scene that serves absolutely no purpose.
Yes.
Other than if you know this movie was in 3D, you're like, well, that must be why that's there. Because there's so many lingering shots.
But I can see it like even in this Universal logo, there's this weird like parallax with the stars and stuff. And I was like, oh, yep.
The stars are flying towards you.
Yeah, they're just trying to be 3D-ish. Yeah. You know?
Yep.
So anyway.
Well, before we move on to that, I just want to quick share. And I apologize if I've shared this before, but I have a distinct memory about this movie. Okay. And I maybe have shared it on the podcast before, but I saw this movie and Back to the Future for the first time on the same day.
Wow.
Because my mom, based on my memory, it would have been 86, 87.
Okay.
It's very possible I know I've discussed this
before.
So you
just thought Leah Thompson was in everything.
Well, apparently my mom did. Oh, yeah. Apparently my mom thought I loved Leah Thompson, which, you know, at that age, I'm not sure if I was old enough yet. But yeah, I just thought, yeah, Leah Thompson's in everything. So my mom brought home two movies. My cousin from out of town was staying over with us. And so I told my mom to go get some good movies, like cool movies, maybe movies that were a little out of my age range. Because I probably would have been like 8 years old. Yeah, 8 years old, 1986, something like that. And my cousin said, ooh, get Back to the Future. Because he had heard, I don't think I knew anything about it.
Yeah.
He had heard about it. So my mom comes home with Back to the Future and Jaws 3. And it's very possible that Jaws 3, at least in part, is the first Jaws movie I ever saw. So I'll always associate this movie with Back to the Future and a doubleheader of Leah Thompson.
Cool.
So
the thing I will say out of the gates, the premise of this film is a good idea.
Yes, I agree completely.
I mean, this is essentially Jurassic Park before Jurassic Park, right?
Bingo.
Right?
Yes.
This good idea is then thwarted by literally every creative decision made after, I don't know, the screenplay was written.
Well, I can share my overall opinion of the movie now or at the end.
There is a title. Let's wait till the end. So there's a title. This is how crazy this movie is. It has a title card suggested by the Peter Benchley novel.
It does?
Yeah.
I thought it was like based on characters by Peter
Benchley. No. Peter, it's not based on characters. Yeah. Suggested by the Peter Benchley novel.
Interesting.
And I was like, what a weird credit.
You're right, yeah.
And not necessary. Like, it's not suggested by his novel at all.
I wonder if Peter Benchley had like a deal with the studio where he had to receive some type of credit where the entire Jaws franchise has to somehow call. They could have said, you know,
well, there's
based
the
on characters.
That would be the normal way to do
based
it.
Based on characters.
Like this
created.
Movie,
yeah.
It doesn't do anything normal. This movie's so bad.
There's no way we're going to get to the end to share our opinion.
No, we're not.
Just get it out. Get it out of your system.
I'm just getting out. This movie's so bad. They made Richard Matheson a bad writer. Richard Matheson is amazing.
Well, you know what he has spoken on this movie, that he submitted a story treatment.
I would be horrified to have my name. If I was Richard Matheson, I would be just pissed that my name was on this.
I'm amazed that he didn't ask for it to be taken off, because he's on record as saying he submitted a story or at least a story treatment, maybe a full script, and he said, of course he would say this, he said it was great. Like the script I wrote was great. I would imagine it got mostly rejected because it would have been expensive. Because anything Richard Matheson writes would be good. I think his was the one that they did get the shark contained. It was no longer in the open ocean. It was like in a lake or something.
Yeah, my understanding was in a lake.
Right. And that's, just to echo what you said earlier, like the premise of this movie, I think is fantastic.
It's a great premise.
It's a great premise
for a Jaws movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a great premise for any basic, Monster on the Loose movie. You mentioned Jurassic Park. This may not mean anything to some of our listeners, but there's The Creature from the Black Lagoon, the sequel to that movie, is called Revenge of the Creature. And it basically is the same thing. They bring the creature from the Black Lagoon back to Florida.
Okay.
To like a SeaWorld type park.
Florida, where nothing good happens.
Nothing good happens in Florida.
Yep.
And it's basically the same thing. They put him in a tank. He's not having it. And then, of course, predictable things happen. But that's where this movie works for me. So this is
my... And then does he have sexual relations on camera for Guillermo del Toro?
Well,
is that how that movie ends?
Yes. you do know that movie, The Shape of Water, like he did want to make Creature from the Black Lagoon. Universal said no. So he made Shape of Water. He basically is like, well, this is the movie I was going to make anyway. You don't own the patent on Gilman. Like, yeah. I'm just going to do this.
Cool.
Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I like it when I like it when the studios get screwed over.
Yeah. Well, we have here's
speaking of people screwing over studios, this guy that produced this movie.
Oh, Alan Landsberg.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
Yeah. Kind of a creature feature made for TV movie guy. Yes. And boy, that shows up.
Yeah, for sure. This whole movie has a very made for TV vibe about
it. It's just like at every corner, we're gonna hack and slash.
So that's where I was going with what I was just about to say is where this movie works for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie, and this may catch you off guard, I think this movie is pretty good.
Okay.
Not in the context of being a Jaws sequel. It's pretty good as a low, like if this had been directed by Joe Dante and was not called Jaws 3 and was just called, Teeth or Shark, like it had just been,
sure.
had a tongue and, it could have been like Piranha, right? The same basic conceit, just pepper in some tongue-in-cheek humor and some cheesy effects. Like that's where this movie suffers is, it can't decide if it's like a full-on Jaws sequel or like a schlocky B-grade campy.
The thing is,
it's not
a B-grade campy B-movie. Like, it's not that. It's not.
It's not
fun that way.
Yeah, it's too dead to be anything.
Speaking of dead, like the most lethargic shark I've ever seen.
Oh, let's save film. That. Let's save that. I got a
lie.
Oh
boy. So let's get to the
let
first.
Let me finish my thought. That where this movie works for me is I like the movie as a whole,
mm-hmm.
except any time the shark is on screen. This same exact movie.
How can you like a Jaws movie where you don't like the shark?
Exactly. That's why my overall opinion of this movie is negative. I think I think that if you took this movie and redid it with better shark. Because here, like as an example, and I'm getting way ahead of myself, but there's
things too. The whole story doesn't really come together and nobody knows what they're doing. It's
all right. Let's just break it down scene by scene.
Okay.
Let's get started.
First fish. The first death is a fish.
Mm-hmm.
I think a grouper might be the name of that fish.
We keep the tradition of opening with a shark POV underwater and something dying.
And by the way, now it's the worst POV I've ever seen. It's like the guy's like literally swimming with the camera and like it's the shakiest footage. Whoa, man. So yeah, then we just
did you catch that the shark at the grouper after it's been bitten, its mouth is still opening and closing?
Oh yeah.
I wonder, did they actually kill a fish and just film this, or is this an effect? I realize it's a process shot, but I wonder if it's actually a real severed fish head. I think it might be.
I have no idea. Anyway, it's this horrible. The process shots, the composite shots in this film, are just beyond. Bad.
I think they hold up a little better in 3D, I think.
Oh, boy. It is. It's nonsense how bad they are.
Yeah.
This movie came out the same year as Return of the Jedi. And you watch what's going on. You watch the process shots that are happening in there.
Yes.
And then they have 1,000 things flying at the camera, and they have to just have one thing go by the camera, and they can't even key it correctly.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Anyway, I'll get on that later. So the fish death, this seems really unnecessary.
It's so bad.
And then to hold on it for so long on this decapitated head that's just opening, and to what end? For what purpose?
Purely 3D titillation. It serves no plot point.
Is it, though?
It's like going to Disneyland where you just watch, you go on one of those rides where there's no story. It's just like soaring over California, and it's just like, look. You're flying over a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no story purpose to it other than to go like, wow, that looks cool.
And yeah, but I know what I'm getting with Soarin', California.
Yeah. No, it's horrible.
I like Soarin', California, by the way.
Me too. Oh, do you know they decommissioned it in California anyway? Jerry Goldsmith score.
Yeah, I did go to it. It's a different, it's a slightly different ride now. It's it's not California. It's like the world now.
Okay.
Anyway,
on your Return of the Jedi note, I'm just going to point out real quick. So Return of the Jedi cost around $32 million to make in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
This movie was about half the budget, about $18 million. But that brings up a bigger question. Where is that $18 million in this movie.
It's crazy.
Like 99% of this movie is people running around.
SeaWorld.
In SeaWorld.
A real SeaWorld.
This movie.
No budget there.
How did they go from Jaws 2 to Jaws 3 in cutting the shark's screen time down?
Yeah. Like,
there's less shark in this movie, right? I didn't count it all up, but isn't there less shark in this than Jaws 2?
It's the least amount of shark I think we get in any of the movies.
Might be less than Jaws 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the effect shots in this movie. So I know when we were talking about Piranha, the worst effect in Piranha is the flock of piranha. It's
like animated.
It's dry for wet, and it's just shadows of fish that go by in like some smoke, basically.
Oh, yes, yes.
That effect is better than every effect in this movie.
I think there's a couple of good shark shots in this movie. When the shark is... I keep wanting to jump ahead.
Yeah.
There's a couple of... There are shark shots in this that work, I think. But by and large, it's terrible.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Anyway. So underwater camera is super shaky. It's even worse because you have the credits over the top. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. They have all these lines, these leading lines to make... it looked like the credits are popping out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You don't need to do that if it's already 3D.
No, they can just float.
You don't, they're already not getting what 3D is.
Friday the 13th Part 3, the same year, does the same thing. It has, like, bursting credits.
But it doesn't...
It's unnecessary.
It's unnecessary because they'll just be out. That's just what they'll do. Oh, boy. It's just a... Anyway.
It's hard to separate the 3D. It's almost like we need one podcast on Jaws 3, the movie, and another podcast on the 3D effects of Jaws 3.
Yeah, I'll touch on it a little bit just because I really noticed when they are trying to do 3D stuff. So, Leah Thompson, we meet her first. She really does, I learned, she really does all of her own skiing.
Yeah. She had to train to be that scene at the beginning when you see her climb up. That's her.
That's her. And it is not obvious. And I think the film really does her a disservice by kind of just cutting away and...
Yeah, they could have easily gotten away with not using Leah Thompson the way it shot.
Oh, the way it shot. I just assumed it was a stunt double. In fact, it's not a stunt double when you look really close.
It's her.
But it's such... It's filmed so wide. Mm-hmm. She's most of the time obscured by these awful titles.
Yes.
And then there's just quick edits where you just don't even notice that it's actually her. So, boy, I would have been pissed if I was her.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I had to read that online to find out that was even her. And then I went back and watched it. And I'm like, oh, yep,
yeah. It really is. Yep. It did not need to be her, but man, it is. So, yeah, I don't know what kind of training that takes to get on top of that pyramid, but I can't imagine it's fast.
So here's a question. We get our first, the shark is just right there from, whatever.
Oh, minute, ready to go.
Minute three, we have the shark in the movie.
Yeah.
Question, do you think this is, spoiler
alert. Is it the slowest shark I've ever seen in my entire life?
Yes, but which slow shark?
Do you think this is the baby or the mom?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we know.
Does it really matter?
Nope. And that's like a plot point that kind of got blown, I think, is that there's two sharks.
Yeah.
Even the reveal. Anyway, yeah, we just want to jump ahead bad.
Then we get Michael Brody. Mm-hmm. So my problem with his character is he is a passive character. He's just an onlooker.
Yeah, he doesn't really take much of an active role. He does a little bit.
Almost nobody does. That's kind of one of the biggest problems in this movie is like everybody's like the only person that kind of takes an active role is his girlfriend, Bess Armstrong.
Bess Armstrong, yeah.
Which I had to, her face cropped up for about 5 minutes and I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like, I've seen her in a gajillion things and I can't think of a single one.
TV shows.
Yeah.
She was in a million TV shows in the 80s.
Yeah. I realized what I really knew her from was My So-Called Life.
Oh, yep.
Back when I was in high school.
My sister watched that show.
Yeah.
I think I actively avoided watching it
because
I was, you know, a teenage boy and it's like, oh, that doesn't look good.
Oh. I liked all the angsty stuff.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Louis Gossett Jr. was a big fixture of my 80s life because this movie and Iron Eagle were movies that I loved right around the same time. Probably loved Iron Eagle a little more than Jaws 3.
I would hope so.
Well,
I've never seen Iron Eagle, but I guarantee it's a better film.
It is. So I've already kind of touched on this. Like, as a kid, I didn't know that this was a bad movie. Yeah. I just watched it. My distinct memory, like, if you can separate yourself from your, you know, 40-year-old brain and put yourself in a, like, a 10-year-old shoes, this is exactly the Jaws movie I think a 10 to 15-year-old wanted to see.
Yeah.
I think I said this on Jaws too. Like, turn off your brain, snob brain. Like,
yeah.
This movie has, it's fun.
I don't think I have a snob brain.
Yeah.
It's hard not to. I do have nice things to say about this movie, and it's mostly the actors.
Yep.
So anyway, we'll get there.
Did you catch that Mike Brody had a Boston Red Sox hat on?
I did.
Reference to his Massachusetts roots.
Yeah. So I really like the jet ski stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that is, it's weird, but it's like kind of awesome. Like, that he's actually doing this in all one take and like no cuts. And
yeah, it's him.
It's really him. And it's hard to do that on that sort of jet ski.
Those are terrible jet. I think we had one of those.
Because typically you don't just stand on those things and just go away. Like, that's almost impossible to do.
They're pretty tough to do, Yeah. I think I tried one of those as a kid. They're terrible. And I know how to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, and let alone, usually you start on your knees, it kind of gets up out of the water, and then you go on your way. But he just kind of jumps on and goes, and it's like, you got to be really on that thing.
You can see him fighting it a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It doesn't look like it's fun. It looks like it's a lot of work.
But the really impressive one is where he dismounts onto the dock and cuts the engine.
Yeah. And where's that jet ski going? Is it just going to float? Like, he doesn't like tie it off or anything.
Oh, it's kind of pinched between a boat, isn't it? Like in the dock. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
At this point in the movie, I really.
Also, they're not on the ocean. It's all a man-made lake. So there's no current.
I do like, at this point in the movie, other than our horrible fish opening, I do like the way this movie is setting up the geography. It's almost like, and I think that's why I watched it last night, and I haven't seen it in probably 15 years. Last night at this point in the movie, I'm kind of going, okay, like, this movie's working. Like, we're setting up geography. We're meeting characters. The shark is already in the movie. We know where it is.
Like, yeah.
It's already building up kind of some stakes.
Sure.
We're meeting characters. I don't mind the characters in this movie. It's only, like, we're going to learn how useless they are as the movie progresses. But at this point in the movie, I'm kind of all in.
Oh, yeah.
Minus the stupid fish thing.
The opening credits were a real, like.
Yeah.
It was the blue light special at Kmart. Yeah. It was like, uh-oh, there's trouble.
If only they had seen Orca, that they would have known right at the beginning. They just got to let their orcas out.
Yeah.
Shark. Gone.
I thought that on my rewatching. I'm like, they have an orca. Just put the orca in the pool or the lagoon or whatever we're calling it. And dunzo. Like, it's not a prob.
I remember as a kid thinking, like, okay, we got dolphins. We got orcas. There's going to be like a big fish battle royale in this movie.
Well, and they do have the dolphins fight it a little bit, which dolphins will fend off.
Yeah.
Whites and other sharks.
I just, at this point in the movie, I'm going like, okay, I see how the deck's getting stacked here. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. You could have had a really, I mean, how cool of that would have been to have, so after Jaws 2 and Orca and they kind of have their back and forth, then you come back in a Jaws movie and kill Jaws with an orca.
Yes.
It would have been great.
Yes.
Anyway. Jet ski stuff is really cool. We get Bess Armstrong actually riding on an orca.
Yeah.
The real actress.
Yes.
Like, so she obviously had to train with these animals.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's
impressive.
It's very impressive. And it's all in camera stuff. And they're doing like dialogue, heavy dialogue scenes, like all in one shot.
Yep.
And there's animals that they're dealing with. And it all comes off very well. I was very impressed by this stuff.
I would never, having seen the movie Blackfish, I would never, ever... I'm never going to SeaWorld, and I'm never going to ride Norca.
So, yeah. Well, anyway. I'm not condoning SeaWorld stuff. I'm just saying, just film-wise, it's very impressive that all this stuff is happening in camera.
Yep.
They're not cutting back and forth like the aforementioned Orca.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all very impressive, all that stuff.
I like the allusion to the fact that the dolphins sense the shark is there and don't want to go out.
Yeah.
I like that.
Anyway, so then Crocodile Dundee shows up.
That's exactly the note I had. Or Crocodile Hunter.
Or Bill Irwin.
Yeah.
Steve Irwin, excuse me.
And his like Captain Quint sidekick.
Yeah, what an odd choice. Like, so what is this?
These guys, first of all, in the context, they are just like the craziest characters in this movie. Like, this movie literally kind of jumps the shark when these two guys show up.
Yeah, so...
But I love them. I think they're like the best part of this movie.
So the one guy straight up looks like Sean Bean. Right? Crocodile Hunter. Like,
yeah. Philip or Fitzroyce, or isn't that his something. Name? Fitzroyce, anyway.
Also...
And I love that the actor's real name is Simon McCorkindale. It's like, hi, I'm McCorkindale. I'm here to audition for Fitzroyce.
Yeah.
Like,
what is he doing there and what's his job?
It's so not explained, other than he's like kind of a big game hunter type person, photographer type personality.
Slash filmmaker?
Yeah, right? He's just like this all around.
I can't get a peg on like what he is.
I think he's like a TV personality. Is he like some sort of
White Hunter, Black Heart, like John Huston, Australian guy?
I assume he's a TV, because people Lou Gossett Jr. introduces him, Mr. Bouchard introduces him as like, obviously you guys all know who this is. So he must be some
big deal.
Yeah. So he must be some kind of like TV personality, like celebrity photographer.
Oh, speaking of Louis Gossett, he, in the credits, he's credited as.
Yeah. Isn't that bonkers?
I'm like, we don't know.
Right.
We don't know who that is. It doesn't make any sense to credit him that way.
I have a feeling that, okay, so he would have been coming off, he would have been a few years removed from his Academy Award nomination.
He's directly off his Academy Award nomination. This is his next film.
Ooh, boy, that the whole Academy Award then Jaws theme will continue.
It will continue.
I feel like that was probably in his contract.
He was already signed on to this, though, before he got the Academy.
Ooh, I wonder if he tried to get out of it.
Don't know.
Probably not, because I'm sure heading into this, it would have been like Jaws 3. Like, those aren't terrible. They make money.
So
I'm sure it was in his contract that he got an on-screen credit, like, as this character. Like, he was going to make this character memorable.
So, he's definitely the John Hammond of this film. So, yes. And that's not my, and while we're talking on Jurassic Park stuff, do you think the Raptor warden, game warden guy in Jurassic Park is a nod to this guy?
There you go.
In Jaws 3.
I think so.
I think it kind of is.
I think I knew I was. There was Jurassic Park parallels, but I didn't think of that one, but I think you're dead on.
Yeah. So even in the garb that he shows up in is very reminiscent of the garb that our game warden in Jurassic Park shows up in. So
Steven Spielberg is a closeted Jaws 3 fan.
Yeah, could be.
Or Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton saw this and thought,
of course, Richard Matheson also wrote Duel. So,
oh yeah, we kind of skipped over that part.
Yeah.
We're on our second Richard Matheson scripted joint.
So all of the getting to know the character stuff, it's all very fun. I think they're personable. I think they're fun to hang out with.
I actually feel like the interplay between the three leads, the Brody boys and Bess Armstrong. I don't know her character's
name. I'm just going to call them all by their actor
names. Dennis, Bess, and John, I think was his name. Anyway.
Michael and Sean, I can remember, but I'm not going to remember anybody else's name.
I think they're doing all right. I think they're believable.
Yeah.
They're not that effective as characters in the movie structure, but as like playing naturalistic people, I think they're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
They're generally likable.
They're likable, and I like being around them. Like, I could have watched them in the bar for like, for like a long time
and we get,
and not cared.
Like, yeah, and we get just enough backstory on them to like kind of care a little bit, even though like part of me wants to go like, who gives a crap about any of their, this kind of stuff in a Jaws sequel, but it actually kind of works. I don't know. I find myself a little bit invested in them.
I am. Yeah. And just that they have lives and these lives are going to go away from this place. And anyway, yeah, it's interesting. So my next note, I have the music. All I can hear is like a bad Indiana Jones ripoff.
It's so,
it has this like dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
And then goes. And then, but then there's no refrain. Like there's not the, cause like the Indiana Jones goes dun 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 dun. There's an answer to the dun dun dun. So it's dun dun dun.
Nothing.
And nothing. And then it goes dun dun dun.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I was like, those are like literally like the same cues, but it's like without the middle parts, like just removed. And I was like, this guy like had Williams on the brain. Like,
oh, I'm sure that. Well, what a tough job to be like, hey, score the third Jaws movie, follow John Williams, but then sound you, like it.
But then but you go your... indie wise, like that's just weird.
Yeah,
like,
it's weird.
I don't know. Anyway, it's bad.
There's one music.
I don't like the music.
There's one bit of music in here I like, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, when you see the credit theme by John Williams, shark theme.
Shark theme.
Yeah, by John Williams. Yeah. I was like, okay.
So this next scene where, oh man, I can't remember
lock the gate.
Name. Yeah, where the big muscle dude locks the gate. I do remember that first time I watched this movie. This was the scene where I couldn't handle it as a 7-8-year-old. I could not.
I immediately was like, $34 million, and this is how they lock their gate.
Yeah. Well, it's knocked off the track. They cover that in the story. It's knocked off the track. They can't get it in. It's a bigger project, so they have to do something to lock the gate. So
well,
this
why
is
why
did what's
he wait
happening.
Till nighttime and dive by himself?
Well, is that the running joke about no overtime? Like, oh, I'm definitely getting overtime.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
So he gets attacked. You know he's going to get attacked.
Yeah.
And then you get, it's all really quick cut, and then you just get this arm.
Oh yeah.
It just looks really bad. It's worse than the fish head.
Yes. Well, this gets into a pattern of this movie where there's like a scene where there's a decent buildup to the shark's attack.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the shark shows up, it's just like garbage. It's like quick cuts, no shark.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's just over and over again. It just seems like lazy filmmaking.
It just, here's my theory. Joe Alves, he certainly played a role in this, but I feel like where this movie falls apart is in all the effects work. Like this scene of him underwater.
But as a director, if it had paid though,
off with a really satisfying shark attack.
But as a director, that's part of your job.
Like, I have this feeling that he shot it, and then when it got to post, I have this feeling he was like kicked out. Or overruled, or like he's like, okay, let's go do this. And they're like, nope, we're over budget. We're not doing any of those things you want to do.
So,
because Joe Alves has
so there's two effects companies on this thing.
Okay.
There's one. So, what they were doing originally, they were doing all the optics with video.
Well, oh, yeah. A lot of the blue screen stuff.
So, when you see it and it's really just kind of murky and muddy looking, like those are the video optics.
Some of the worst special effects.
And then they redid a lot of the video optics with printed optics. Mm-hmm. And those are even worse somehow. Because at least the video optics are all like one Can you imagine like the quality of video optics in 1983?
Like, you can see those shots. Like,
oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they're just blurry. They're just mushy.
A lot of the submarine stuff is just wretched. It's so bad.
So bad. Anyway, it's just. I'm sorry. It's just lazy filmmaking. It's to save a buck, and it's just bad.
So how bizarre
this
is it?
Once again, this came out the same year as Return of the Jedi, which still looks fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I can name a dozen movies that came out.
Speeder bike scenes, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Just so bad.
So how weird is it during this? You get a flash cut of a mouth, then you get bubbles, then you get an inside the mouth of the shark shot.
Really?
Yes, there's a flat. I think they stole it from later in the movie. Like, they didn't have any shot to show. Like, they didn't have enough to
show. It's so quick, I did not notice.
Yeah, there's a flash cut. You know the scene later in the movie, the inside the mouth shot. Like, you get your first shot of that here.
Yeah.
And then the water is amazingly unbloody as his goggles float down. And then his arm floats by the camera. There's just a little cloud of blood.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's coming right at the camera.
Because movie.
Right. And so why do we follow this up? As a kid, I remember thinking this was really cool. Right after this shot, you get the gate getting pushed open a little bit, but not opening. This would be the shark trying to get out.
Right.
As a kid, I always thought like, oh, he's getting in. Like I always, as a kid, I thought the shark's trying to get out. Yeah. I always figured it was like, oh, we have a baby shark in the SeaWorld. And now here's the mama trying to get in.
That would certainly make more sense.
That would make way more sense. Or like have it actually do it. Like the mama shark breaks through.
Even though shark don't mother their young, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes. Well, we've already established from Jaws.
I think it actually is here nor there. But
we've already established in Jaws 2 that sharks do take things personally.
So standoff. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of this game?
Never heard of it.
Apparently it is a thing that does exist, but
what I want to know is
I don't know if this ever was like played in bars or was like a fad that swept the nation. I think this is a movie conceit to have characters touch each other.
Yep. I have a feeling that most of the people going to this movie in 1983 were too young to be in bars, and they were just watching this going like, oh, I guess that's what adults do when they go to a bar.
Yeah.
This works for me.
It is the weirdest thing.
I just got to give a quick shout out to the bar, the waitress, the servers, like an 80s outfit that is so 80s. It looks like, you know, like when you go to an 80s party and everyone just overdoes it with like hair scrunchies and frizzed out perms. And like she's dressed like everyone else in the scene is like just sort of like dated, but not ridiculous. But
she comes up and she looks like, she looks like she woke up and she was dressed by a sentient bag of cocaine.
Yes. Speaking of which, I don't know when else I'm going to work this into the podcast, but in an interview with Dennis Quaid, Dennis Quaid is well known because he had a coke problem in the 80s.
Yeah.
Dennis Quaid in an interview a few years back said he was at the peak of his cocaine addiction during this movie and is high every second.
He goes every single frame he's on cocaine. Yeah.
I didn't know how else I was going to work that into the
podcast. Which is funny because he doesn't appear to be that way.
No, he's pretty high functioning.
Pretty high functioning.
For a cokehead.
But. Yeah. Except maybe when he starts running through the park, then.
Oh, and he crashes the little golf cart.
That seems very coke-addled. So these are fairly dark scenes in the hair, and I think you really get you can really see a lot of this film's actually pretty dark, but it's a very grainy film, and I wanted to point out why that is.
Yeah.
So the process they used is called Air Vision, which was developed. Basically, this is the first movie it was ever used for. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many movies it was used for since, but. Yeah. What they would do instead of traditional 3D movies, they would do two strips, a film, kind of like a Technicolor process.
Traditional 3D.
Traditional
3D. You literally had two cameras. You
literally had two strips of film going, in two different cameras, and left eye and right eye. And then this actually what it would do is split the frame So you're not actually exposing, you're not exposing as much film as you normally would.
Yes.
And that's why it looks grainier, because you literally have, once it's blown up, it's twice the amount of grain. Basically.
Yeah, it's basically your normal movie, a 35 millimeter film frame. This movie is effectively half.
Yeah, it's it's not quite.
It's half left. Your left eye is the top half of a 35 millimeter film frame.
Yeah.
And so if you're watching this in 2D, you're only seeing the left eye.
Yeah.
So literally half this movie's quote unquote resolution, you're not watching if you're watching this in 2D.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you put the fact that they have the super, most of the low quality actually comes from the 3D lenses that were on the camera. So if you want to approximate the look of this movie to 16 millimeter, it's actually worse than that, because you have a 16, half of a 35 millimeter frame. That's a better description. You have half of a 35 millimeter frame going through their special AeroVision filter that's on this prismatic filter. So
I was going to say, it looks very similar to 16 millimeter to me.
And a little bit worse in a way, because actually this whole like exposing
it gets
half,
very fuzzy towards the edges of frame. Right. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, extremely. Yeah. Very lots of chromatic aberration, which is the, so we're getting into my area of, this is what I do for a living. So
yeah.
I'll try not to throw down too many technical words, but chromatic aberration is just a fancy word for like color distortion.
Yeah.
And so way at the edge of the frames, you get a lot of chromatic aberration. So,
well, not just that, but just focus problems, like
big time.
Yeah. It's just,
there are shots in this movie where it's like, especially towards the end, where you're like, this shot is so out of focus.
There's one shot that's above water that's just straight up out of focus. It's just like,
yeah.
It's 100% out of focus. It's something with Dennis Quaid on like a dock or something. There's like at night, I think. Anyway, it's just straight up out of focus, the whole shot. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think I know exactly. And it's a three shot with like,
It's like
with
three people.
Simon McCorkindale. Yeah, it's way out of focus. And then there's, but the camera, it's a tracking shot where the actors move, and at some point
it does get into focus.
It gets into focus because they must not be able to change the focus.
Yeah, but then why do that?
Yeah, don't do it.
It's bad.
This movie, to go on a bit of a tangent about the camera work, there are shots in this movie where I can tell they did not shoot it in 3D, and it's very, very few, but there's probably a solid 1 to 2 minutes of screen time in this whole movie that they just, you can tell they're like, well, there won't be any 3D in this scene, so why bother to shoot it in 3D? And you can tell because there is a handful of shots in this movie where it looks not grainy at all. It looks pretty crisp. And so there's just a handful of shots that I actually thought as I watched it last night, like they stick out because I'm like, oh, that looks pretty good, because it's, you can tell they got rid of the 3D. So, but yeah, to show this, to quick kind of finish the thought that you had, the other reason they shot it this way is because most 3D movies in the 50s, they actually had to have two projectors to show 3D. So, you know, a 3D movie, you know, House of Wax from the 50s, they had to shoot it with two cameras and they had to project with two projectors. And then each projector had a filter on it and everybody wore passive polarizing filters. And
yeah, but which had to be a nightmare though.
A nightmare. That's why it died.
But if you ever had any problem with the print, those two prints would have to like be reconciled exactly. Otherwise it completely would ruin.
Yep.
Whereas this is all on one film print and then you can just project it through the one.
Yeah. That's the other half of the puzzle here, is that they also projected with a single projector, and the projector had to basically have the same lens.
It's basically the same way kind of anamorphic works.
Yeah, they had to basically the same type of lens that was on the camera to shoot it. Every theater
would have to have that lens on.
Instead of telling every movie theater have two projectors, every movie theater just got shipped by Universal. Like, here's your special lens, throw it on your projector.
Yep.
And then that was it.
Yeah. So anyway, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
I
will say that the 3D, like the way they shot this in 3D, like it's the right way to shoot in 3D at that time and avoid the two camera thing. And it actually, if anybody has the opportunity to see the 3D Blu-ray, like the 3D is good. Like the depth, as far as like a technical, like,
It's a very convincing depth effect. When they're not like doing the like blow in your face stuff, But the shots, a very natural looking 3D.
Yeah, like the shots where they're just in the park and like someone's talking and the lagoon is in the background, like it looks great.
Yeah.
So anyway. So we're shooting at night and we have the
it's certainly not necessary though, I think.
No, it was definitely a cash grab.
Sure.
And it could have been great. This movie could have gone either way. I think the 3D could have worked.
Yeah.
I think personally, I don't know if you've seen Friday the 13th Part 3. The 3D helps that movie. It's a better movie for being in 3D. It's fun. It does everything that this movie should have done. Like, it pays off in the right ways, but there are a couple poke you in the eye moments that are stupid, but not nearly as bad as this movie.
Oh, this one is like, it's so like clunky. They're like, it's been 10 minutes. Let's do another pokey in the eye thing. That usually has nothing to do with story or like, it's just really bad.
It's in Friday the 13th. It's part of the story. It serves a purpose.
Yeah.
You just watched that for you watched the Friday the 13th movies all recently, right?
I did for the first time, all of them.
Yeah. For the Matt Gorley in Gorley, we earned in. In Voorhees We Trust
with Gorley and Rust. Great podcast. They're starting on the Michael Myers movies now. I had never seen any of the Jason movies, so I every week I would watch another one and listen along to them. And it was a very fun experience. So yeah, we cut back to them talking on the beach with all the night seagulls.
Oh yeah, we have a day for night scene. Immediately followed by a night for night scene. Obviously, because one is like a location shot on the beach and they couldn't bring all the lights down there, and the other one is in SeaWorld.
Yeah, but you could at least get a stretch of beach where there's no seagulls, right?
Like,
it is bad. It's like they threw out bread before they got there.
Could we get a few more seagulls in here, please?
Yeah. So, I just added my notes. Night gulls. Anyway. A little behind the scenes, Leah Thompson and Dennis Quaid were a thing, became a thing on this film.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There might be some, little telling tales outside of school here, but there might have been a little overlap with his marriage to PJ Souls.
Uh-oh.
So, which I did not realize he was married to her.
Oh, well, I think somewhere in the back of my mind that piece of information existed.
Yeah.
But yeah. Interesting.
Because their marriage ended in 83, and this came out in 83, so they would have been filming this in 82, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
Dennis.
Oh, Dennis.
You rascal.
You and your women and cocaine.
Quick side note, as a native Bozeman, Montana resident, Dennis Quaid was one of the more known local celebrities. He had a permanent home right outside of Bozeman. And, I'd see him walking around Bozeman shopping. I saw Meg Ryan. This was been, in the 90s. I think they split up in, like, 2001. But, Meg Ryan would come into our store and buy things. And every now and then I'd see Dennis Quaid. And he'd more where he was mostly known for being seen is he would him and his band would play at a bar in Paradise Valley. So you could pretty much just go see Dennis Quaid every Friday.
Fun.
Went down to the Paradise Valley bar.
Cool.
I think... the Hot Springs bar. Anyway, side note.
Yeah. So, the Coral Thieves, they don't need to be in this movie.
Nope. It's purely checking a box. It's been 10 minutes. We got to have a shark attack.
A shark attack that shows no shark.
Nope.
Once again.
I like the light.
Even less shark than the last time.
It goes back to my original statement. Like, great, good buildup, no payoff.
Yeah.
The light underwater going away, I think that's that's a good...
That's cool, but then, why are you showing us coral under the water? Like,
oh, yeah, that was the...
If then you're never going to show...
Yep.
Even...
There's no underwater shots.
We don't even show the guy next to the coral. We just show the coral. Like,
yeah.
It's so weird.
And again, back to my statement, where I think Joe Alves...
I
don't think he made it... I think he was not involved in the post.
They're putting... I don't know. I just... It's kind of an inept director. I think there's a reason he never directed a film again.
What if it's inept editing, not an inept directing?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's all kinds of ineptness in this film.
There's plenty of blame to go around.
Yeah. It's not just Joe. And then we get a... the Coral Thieves, we get another 3D moment here with as they're putting their boat into the water, mm-hmm. they hit a cacktail.
That might be, I think I had a that cacktail, in my
notes. And it goes like towards the frame and like bounces like it's going to poke you in the eye.
That was like, in my notes is the most
that
like.
That is just lazy.
That was the most, that's the biggest, like other stuff at least, like you have like, okay, an octopus tentacle or an eel or whatever, like. There's like at least something where it's like the audience can at least be like, "Ooh, gross," you know. Like the
I'm like plant,
but the plant in your eye. That's literally. It feels like they were shooting the scene that day, and they're just like,
"Hey, we could have this come out." And yeah,
poke you in the eye with a cattail.
Anyway,
sure, shoot it. So, let's go.
Yep,
it's terrible.
Yeah. So yeah, then we get Leah Thompson and Sean Brody. Going in these colored little barrier things. And I noticed on the side of one, they're called privacies. Like S-E-A.
What?
Privacy. Do you see what they did there? Because it's SeaWorld.
Ah, yes.
Privacy.
So what do they do? Are they like little like kid like playpens like, for toddlers?
I think you're like you're supposed to be able to like lay out on the beach, but like not have people like look directly at you. But they're like a foot tall.
Unless someone walks right by, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. They're weird. But anyway, I noticed that they actually had a name. So I thought that
they
was...
must be a real thing. I can't imagine the production had them made.
No. They obviously probably were there. So yeah, she gets Sean in the water. And here's a missed opportunity. Mm-hmm. We should be, it's a big deal for him to get in the water. He's scared of sharks. We know there's a shark in the water, yet we know he's not in trouble because the shark's over dealing with coral thieves.
Yep.
There's no tension to this.
Yes.
It's really bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
This whole sequence, other than kind of you get your little horrible shark attack scene, and you get your romance moving further along with Sean Brody. Other than that, it serves no purpose.
Which has no payoff later.
No payoff. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Nothing at all.
They just disappear from the movie.
Yeah. When the attack. Yeah. When she gets bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had notes on that too. Like the way. Yeah. Just.
Yeah. Never to be heard from again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you get the morning after. They're all nursing. They're overhung brains.
I like this scene.
It's a good scene.
Yes.
I do like it.
The dog.
I like the dog with the ears up. That's weird. It's just a weird
great
thing.
Touch.
I like it. It's fun. I just have one sentence for this whole scene. Beepers.
Beepers. Everybody's got their beepers. We got a little product placement going on.
Yeah, we get some...
Yeah, we got Wheaties.
We got Wheaties.
Got our Tropicana.
Yeah.
Just feels like one bit. Yeah. All every shot, the cereal box is moving to make sure it's like in frame. Like,
yeah.
Wheaties, Tropicana.
Also watch
Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts in the background that they're not eating. Watch the coffee pot. It's it mysteriously fills up as the scene goes along.
Beverage levels are the hardest thing to manage in continuity.
Yeah,
I like their sweet in-wall stereo in the kitchen. That kitchen's got some wallpaper that just...
So, yeah, then we get... a photo guy shows up at the pen, at the mm-hmm. dolphin pen, and they have a little interaction there. And you think that, like, this is going to be kind of like a love triangle thing, but then she just, like, shuts him down, and he's like, okay, well, moving on. I'm photo guy.
That's why I kind of like him. He doesn't get too slimy, but...
I don't know. I just can't. What is this character? I just don't get what he is and what he's doing. And it's just so weird.
Yeah.
I
still think he's my favorite character in the movie, though. I'm just going to stick with that. Every time he's on screen, you feel like you're going to get more out of him and you never quite do.
And you never do.
But
yeah.
He's still entertaining.
Oh, he certainly is. Yeah. Anyway, then the girlfriend mm-hmm. of, I don't know, first shark victim guy.
Right.
He shows up. And also, what's lady's deal? Like, why is this Mike's problem?
Because Mike is his boss. Mike is like the head of technical operations.
Also, yeah, what does Mike do? Is he a grunt laborer, or did he like design and build all of this?
He seems to be like the chief engineer of...
It seems to not know what his job is.
Well, the closest...
Is he just an underwater welder? Because that's what he is later.
That's about it, yeah. I think he's a mechanical engineer.
But then at times it feels like he's like in charge of everything. Like,
yeah.
And...
Well, they're not going to accurately show us how like the operations of SeaWorld work. They have to condense his role into
also, how is this actually SeaWorld?
Isn't that surprising? It is actually SeaWorld. How did SeaWorld?
Well, and with their logo on everything.
Yeah. Doesn't it seem like.
Why would they sign off on this?
Right. Right. It just feels like.
It makes them look inept. It makes them look like they don't know how to train their people or how to deal with. Bad situation.
Was SeaWorld just like not the massive enterprise that it is today?
SeaWorld came out in like the 60s.
Yeah.
So like they were an institution by this point.
They must have just been like, Jaws sequel, how can we not be a part of it? But yeah,
going into this film, I thought it was a SeaWorld type of.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know it was actually SeaWorld.
You can, if you go to SeaWorld Florida today, I haven't, but I know you can go to SeaWorld today, and it's obviously they've built it up a lot more, but most of this stuff, like you can go see it. Like you can just walk the shooting locations of this movie.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Also, apparently the waitress from the bar has clearance to just walk around in the filtration system.
Yeah. SeaWorld. It's just weird. Yeah. And this is the last we ever see of her.
Yep.
I mean, wouldn't you want to have her come back when the body's found or like,
you'd think that'd make for an interesting scene.
She's genuinely concerned about his whereabouts. Like she's mad at him, but she's concerned. Like she doesn't wish him harm. She says that I think 2 or 3 times.
I don't mean him no harm.
I don't mean no harm. So then we get into the submarine.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, oh boy.
Another like,
speaking of other things that don't need to be in this movie.
Well, I feel it's another, like, here's our build up. There's okay, we got a submarine and a shark movie. Like this could be really fun. There could be an interesting thing to come out of this, and it's just another turd in the punch bowl.
Yeah. The opticals are so bad here.
This is our
there's one point where it like turns and like it gets a reflection from the green screen and like keys itself out.
Yes.
It's so bad.
And you have the like rock formations.
Oh God.
Also, I love the idea of this like underwater tube system, but also like there's no way this is seawater. And they have like 100-yard visibility.
Yeah.
Like that, I can't. Anyway, it makes for some interesting shots, but it's just the whole idea of it is terrible.
Well, it's not even the idea of it. I think those shots are fine.
Mm-hmm.
They're just pulled off horribly.
That like, shot where
they're just beyond, they're like, you might as well have those rocks made out of construction paper. Like, it is so bad.
Yeah. The scene where the submarine, like, comes right at the camera and then turns, I think that's where it keys out.
It keys itself. It's like, the bottom of it, like, just disappears, like, because it's getting reflection from the blue or green or whatever it's up against.
Why was that even a process shot? That could have been a model in fog, like...
That's the other thing. You're making special effect shots out of things that do not need to be special effects.
Exactly. So... I realize
this isn't a spaceship in space.
Yeah.
This is in a real situation with a real thing. Like you can just do the thing.
And you mentioned like, oh, Jedi came out the same year as this. Like,
but also,
movies that came out 30 years before this have better special effects than this.
Right. Wizard of Oz has better special effects than this.
Yeah.
Also, like this is optical printing. Like this has been refined at this point.
Mm-hmm. They were definitely like fiddling with new technology.
But this is like 6 years. This is 6 years after Star Wars.
Yeah. It's embarrassingly bad.
It's just so bad.
It's 30 plus years after 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Like, yeah.
Anyway.
Or 2001. Like.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no reason this movie has to look
like
this.
It definitely, that's where I go back to my, like, this whole, like, TV production crew thing. Like, I don't think Joe Alves ever for a second in post-production looked at any of this and went, oh, yeah, that's great. Like, I'm sure he was, there's no way he, I just feel like he got overruled at every corner.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
like, nope, we're doing it this way.
Okay. Anyway, I still think at the end of the day, it's like you got to.
Yep, your name's on it.
Your name's on it, so you got to fight the fight, man. I like the dolphins. I think they're like all the business that they do in this scene.
Yeah, the dolphin business.
I don't know why Dennis Quaid is mad at him, but I do like that Dennis Quaid and Bess Armstrong are doing all their own scuba work.
Oh, yeah, that's them. Again, I mean,
it's really them.
Yeah.
Like, in scuba, you're doing all these scenes. Like,
yeah.
Also, a submersible that fills up with water, what's that?
It's there purely as a propellant. It's not like a submarine that they can breathe inside.
What is
even
the point? Like, it's just
I think that's a thing.
Okay.
You can go do that in Hawaii right now. You're just inside this, like, little propulsion vehicle.
Okay. Well, anyway. All right, and with that, I think that's a good time as any to wrap up this episode.
Yeah, but don't worry, we'll be back next week.
Yeah, only one more. These are going to be a little bit longer, obviously.
Yeah, we don't want you to listen to a month of Jaws 3.
Yeah, no one needs to do that. So only two episodes this time.
It's like a Band-Aid. Just want to get it all
Yeah, just get it all off. But there, it was just a bit too, you know, it was a bit too long to do as one, so... Anywho, Jeremy, where can they do all the things?
Well, if they want to talk more about this and with us, they can find us on Facebook. Look for the Real Jaws Minute. We got a Facebook group over there. And if you like us, you can also like and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get it. And more importantly, tell a friend. If you know a friend who wants to hear us yammering on about Jaws things, tell them about the podcast, get them to listen. And we'll always keep this podcast free. But if you want to throw a couple bucks at us, check out the comment section or the description section of this fine podcast, and you will get a link to our PayPal account if you want to give us a couple bucks, help us buy some beer and pay for our microphones, stuff like that.
Yeah, and you can catch us next week talking about the second half of Jaws 3 right here on the Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.